VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome to Crime Prevention 101 with host Susan Barnstone. We're so happy you've joined us this weekend. Over the next hour, you'll learn the tips, tricks, and vital information that'll help you keep yourself confident and safe. Now, here's the host of Crime Prevention 101, Susan Barnstone.
And hello, 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 everybody. Welcome again to Crime Prevention 101. And it's so exciting for me today. I know I say that every show, but this is a really especially exciting show for me. Now, somebody asked me the other day what the letters ICSP after my name stand for. And what it stands for is International Crime Prevention Specialist. And it means that I have been certified as such by the International Society of Crime Prevention Practitioners, fondly known as ISCAP, I-S-C-P-P. Now, ISCAP is an international crime prevention organization, and their members include crime prevention officers, police crime prevention unit managers, loss prevention managers, security managers, neighborhood watch organizers, community liaison organizers, and all sorts of people from the private and public sectors like myself. And ISCAP has a variety of crime prevention training opportunities and programs and so forth for its members, in addition to this certification course, which I took. Now, every other year, ISCAP holds a crime prevention symposium, which lasts about 3.5 days, and they give lectures by leading crime prevention experts on a variety of subjects, and I really, really wanted to be there. Crime prevention practitioners come from all over the world to meet each other and learn, but I just wasn't able to get away. So I had the idea, why not see if I can't broadcast live from that symposium, even though when you hear this show, that symposium will be over, but we are going to be broadcasting live today, and I'm going to get a chance to do at least a brief interview with some of the great presenters that are going to be there. I mean, these are talented, dedicated men and women. They're out there in the trenches. They're making communities safe for you and I, and they're educating other police officers and crime prevention officers on how to do the same thing. So I'm really excited. We're going to be talking about a variety of subjects. We're going to get 2 shows out of this. There are so many people. I'm going to be talking about revitalizing neighborhood watch programs, crime prevention and Citizens Corp. We're going to be talking about a couple of other things today, onto this show today. So my very first guest is Richard Kennedy, who is ISCAP's Executive Director. Richard, welcome to Crime Prevention 101.
Good morning, Susan. I'm privileged to be here. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, thank you so much. How is the symposium going, Richard?
Oh, it's been fantastic. We've had some very good trainers, and a lot of great information's been shared so far, and we still have another day to go, too. So everybody is so far has been very positive on everything that's going on here.
I knew it would be. About how many participants did you get this year?
We have between 60 and 65 participants this year. Everything's down a little bit because of the economy and everything. But we have, like I say, some of the top people in the world are here presenting. And like I say, the programs are just astronomical.
That's amazing. Richard, tell everybody a little bit about your background and give us an overview of ISCAP.
Well, I'm probably the old man in the group. I've been around for about 30 years. I was in the very beginning of ISCPP when we started off in Louisville, Kentucky. In the early 70s, Dean Clotter went to England and looked at a proactive policing we call crime prevention. During that time, he brought it back to the United States, and he was working for the University of Louisville, and they started what they call the National Crime Prevention Institute. They started doing training for the all over the world. People came from all over the world to attend his training. And it was a 4-week training class, but they found out that crime evolves. It moves around. A lot of different things happen. So they needed retraining. They needed updating. So they originally started what was called the NCPI Alumni Association. After 3 years, it had grown. The membership had grown. And we kind of broke away from NCPI to become our own organization called the International Society of Crime Prevention Practitioners. And this is where ISCPP got its birth.
And that was about when?
That was our first meeting was in 1977, and 3 years later, 79 or 80, we broke away from NCPI.
Ah, okay. And then what happened?
Okay, and like I say, we became the International Society of Crime Prevention Practitioners. Right now, we have about 500 members from all over the world. Our largest number, of course, is United States and Canada, but we have members from Australia, members from Singapore, Hong Kong, England, Brussels, just like I say, we have two people here at this symposium from Israel. So it's we get a lot of good information, and they learn a lot from us, and we've picked up a lot of good programs from them. We learned from England not long ago about smart water, and I think Bruce Wall is going to be in there, and he's pretty up to date on that. So remember to ask Bruce about the smart water. It's something that's replacing the Operation ID.
Okay, because this is something that's new to me, too, so I definitely am going to make a little note to ask about that.
But
now,
go ahead.
I was going to say one of the things that I liked best. And by the way, people should know that ISCAP is not, even though the majority of the membership are law enforcement or crime prevention related, it is open to people that want to bring crime prevention techniques and stuff into their community. Correct?
Oh yes, we've got several neighborhood watch leaders right here at this conference that's working with us, and they pick up a lot of stuff that they carry back to their neighborhoods. And we encourage anybody that has any interest in, again, proactive policing or crime prevention, we ask them to come out, and even if they can't come to the conference, they may want to join the ISCPP. We do a couple of things I think that's unique. One, we have a biweekly updates, which is members asking for, hey, I've seen this website, it's really good, or I need some information on auto theft, or I need some information on some other program, and all the people in the world get this, all the members, and they start sending these people information that they may need, or they start sharing these websites. So this happens twice a month. We also put out a quarterly newsletter called The Practitioner, so a lot of good information, and we encourage
And I particularly, by the way, Richard, I have contributed several articles to the practitioner, so
yeah.
I really appreciate the great information that you get from that.
And that is, that's exactly, it's an information sharing network. It's really a lot of what ISCPP is all about. It's no need to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of good programs out there.
Now, one of the other things that ISCAP does is that they have developed this International Crime Prevention Specialist Curriculum, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Covers 34 crime prevention areas. And let me tell you, that thing, you could do bench presses with that curriculum.
500 pages.
Because in order to get certified as an International Crime Prevention Specialist, ICPS, you have to go to an intensive weekend training where you are going through that book and you are tested on that book. I almost pulled my back out carrying that book around. It was so comprehensive, and I learned so much just going through that book and taking that test, and it really raises the bar for people that want to do work in this field and that are in this field. So I think that is a great thing that people should know about, that is available.
Yes, and
to them.
We've also made that book to where you can take it. If you say you want to talk to a group about child safety, it's laid out in a way that you can actually take the outline and make the talk from the book using that. So it really, crime prevention officers that do a lot of public speaking have really gotten a lot out of the book too.
Yeah, it's tremendous, and it's helped me a great deal also. And especially in doing the shows that I'm doing now, I find it's like, you know, it's like a little Bible for me to help me with what I do too. So, and it was also great meeting people from all over the place. I actually had gone down to Pittsburgh to take the test and meet some of the great people that came from that part of the country down there. It was a wonderful experience for me.
Well, let me also encourage anyone that wants to really learn more about ISCPP to go to our website at iscpp.org.
Yes. I like India, C like Charlie, S like sugar. I'm sorry, I like India, F like sugar, C like Charlie, P like Peter, P like Peter. .org. It's a great, great website. Lots of information on that website. All right, now we're coming up on our break, so let's take a break now. And when we come back, I believe I'm going to be talking to Lieutenant Jim Howell about revitalizing your neighborhood watch program.
Yes, and Jim's right here with me.
Excellent. So, okay. All right, everybody, stay tuned. We've got some really good stuff coming up for you.
News, opinion,
hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.fightsafe.com for more information. You'll also find information there on Susan's upcoming Crime Prevention 101 personal safety teleseminars. Think fast, talk fast, fight smart, which stress the many opportunities you have to deter or defuse a criminal encounter and how to use your brains instead of your muscles in a fight. Look for the new book information or sign up for Susan Bartlestone's personal safety seminars at www.fightsafe.com today.
Have you ever thought about having your own internet talk show? Well, if you said yes, then click About Us. Then click Be a Host to get more information. Or just call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417.
Say that again.
480-294-6417. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions at fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions at fightsafe.com. Now back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
And welcome back, everybody, to Crime Prevention 101. The Personal Safety Talk Radio Show. And today I am broadcasting live at the International Society of Crime Prevention Practitioners Symposium being held. It's being held in October in Denver. So obviously the show is pre-recorded. And my first guest up is Lieutenant Jim Howell, and he is leading a workshop on revitalizing your neighborhood watch program. Now, Jim is a past president of ISCAP and also a past executive director. And my little description of him says that while Jim was working as a police officer for the Mount Lebanon Police Department in Pennsylvania, he was tasked with breathing new life into a tired neighborhood watch program. And he's going to be talking. He's doing this workshop for the participants. So, Jim, welcome. Lieutenant Howell, welcome.
Thank you.
To Crime Prevention 101.
Thank you.
Talk a little bit about neighborhood watch programs and why we need new life breathed into them.
And why do we not?
Why do we need new life breathed into them?
Well,
you know, like any program or anything that you're doing, after a while you kind of take it for granted. And maybe, especially with Neighborhood Watch, when you're looking for information, that's the prime thing people are looking for. They want to know what's going on in the community. So there's a tendency when there's nothing going on in the community that people are kind of satisfied and they sit back and they don't want to come to the meetings. So you've got to sit back and try to figure out, well, how do I get them there? You know, what do I
well,
do?
Jim, let's back up one. Tell everybody exactly what a Neighborhood Watch program is for those that are those listening out there that aren't quite sure what it is, and how do we get a program into a neighborhood?
Okay. When I teach this course of Revitalize, the first thing I do is go back and talk about how we establish Neighborhood Watch so that everybody's on the same page and maybe we realize some mistakes that we made when we started our program.
Now, these have to be done, you have to go to the police department, correct?
Well,
in order to get one?
There's several ways of doing it. Normally,
oh, okay.
The police are involved either as the sponsor of it, working with the community, or the community sponsors it with the help of the police. You can do it either way, whatever way the community is more comfortable with. But it's a partnership.
Who in the community, like a community board or your councilman, or who would you go to?
It could be all kinds of people. What I chose to start mine, I chose victims of crime as my watch coordinators and my captains because those people have already been traumatized by crime. They want to do something about it, and they're very enthusiastic, and they're ready to jump on the bandwagon. So they make really good partners. And and most of them are active members of the community. So they've got other ties to the community with either kids in sports or senior citizens, whatever it might be. But they make real good coordinators for me.
And the members are all volunteers,
yes.
Correct?
That's correct.
And what does the Neighborhood Watch do?
The primary goal of the Neighborhood Watch is nothing more than looking out for each other. If I see something in my neighborhood, which I'm familiar with because I live there, if I see something that doesn't look right, all I'm asked to do is to pick up the phone and call the police. I'm not asking people to go out and do anything one-on-one. I'm not asking them to pursue bad guys. We're just saying pick up the phone and call us. That's the very, very primary focus of Neighborhood Watch.
Do they go out on patrols and things like that, or cars, or bicycles, or how is it, what's the mechanics of it?
Well, those kinds of things, you know, depending on where you're at and what kind of a program you're running. Now, some programs do not have patrols. Some programs have simply people watching out for each other. But part of it is, no matter whether they're out on the street or in the house, the watch program, the meetings, we provide training to those people so that if they are going to be part of a patrol, they have to have the training to do that, and they have to have and understand what their obligations are and what their limitations are. We don't want vigilantes by any means.
Right. This is not vigilantism.
No.
What kind of training do they get?
Well, there's all kinds of trainings. We like to make it, the very first meeting is certainly an organizational meeting where we talk to people and ask them to join the program and find out, you know, what are they looking for? Well, I could tell you what they're looking for. They're looking for the crime stats in their neighborhood. So the first meeting is, here's what's going on. Here's why we're having this meeting. Here's what we're going to do in the future, and here's what we want you to do for us. So the first meeting is a planning meeting. Now, after that, then we can specialize. We could talk about maybe burglaries, how to prevent them. We could talk about the trauma of a burglary if you have been a victim, you know, why you're feeling the way you're feeling. We can do things on drugs. Whatever is, you know, whatever is handy and whatever is happening right now and then, that's the subject we would pick. We can do drugs. We can do meth labs. Whatever that community seems to want, that's what we'll do. But not only are we going to give them information when we do that, we're going to train them to be a good witness, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
How to call
what's involved in that?
Well, you'd be surprised how difficult it is to describe another person. We've done some mock robberies with our banks, and one of the problems we had, the police robbed the banks, but we would bring them back in after the fact, and we have already had all the employees who were involved fill out a witness form, and it was incredible. when they looked at the person and then looked at the sheet, how off they were. So we teach them to do what we do, start at the head, go to the foot. Don't talk to each other, but put it down and what you saw. Don't talk to your partner over there and say, did you think it was tall or short? So it's very difficult to do, but it's a good thing to learn. And we also talk to them about describing vehicles and getting license numbers, that if Joe gets half the number and the lady down the street gets the other half, well, we're in business.
Okay. Now I like that. That's excellent.
Thank you.
So they're getting good crime prevention information. They're getting a realistic idea of what the crime situation is like in the neighborhood area for the watch. Good training. And then what happens from there? How are there are patrols, right? The neighborhood watch involves patrols. So how is that organized?
The ones that have patrols?
Well, don't all the neighborhood watch programs have patrols, or no?
Well, some neighborhood watch programs do. Ours did not, but some do.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
They're volunteers. Again, they're volunteering their vehicles. We may simply provide them with police radios that they could talk on a certain frequency so that if they saw something suspicious, they could report it right away. Again, we're not asking them to pursue a vehicle. We're not asking them to approach anybody. We want them to just give us information, and we'll take that information in and do our job.
Oh, so that's so interesting. So there's some options involved in terms of time commitments and so forth. If the community wanted patrols, you could have patrols. Now, if they don't have patrols, how are they looking out for things? Just happen to see something, or?
Right. I mean, if you think about it, all the activities you do around your home on a daily basis, maybe the people next door work all day. But if I'm retired, I don't work all day, but I work out in the yard all day. So I have to look over and I see their house every day. I know that there's no lights on every morning when they leave, or I know that they always close their windows and doors, and I see something that doesn't look right. It's going to grab me right away because I'm so used to seeing it and acclimating myself to that neighborhood that it's very easy for me to spot something suspicious. Guarantee you, on your street, if you look out, you're going to see something that's out of shape or out of whack, and you're going to know something's wrong, and you're going to pick up that phone again, and don't call your husband at work and say, hey, guess what I saw? You think we ought to... No, you're not going to do that. What you're going to say is, pick up the phone, dial 911, and tell us about it. And that's one of the unique things we have to overcome. People have an inert fear of calling the police. They don't want to bother you. And one of the things we tell them, we say, you know, you've got a $40,000 car in the driveway that you drive every day, and you've got a big screen TV that you'll watch every day, and you've got $1,000 worth of dryers and washers you use every day. You're paying a lot of money for us. Use us every single day.
So you're actually educating people in terms of kind of suspicious things,
yes,
to look out for that they might kind of pass by, and you're really establishing a closer relationship between the police department and the community by encouraging them to call and to know that they're not going to be laughed at or, you know.
Yes, and that's very important because we don't want them to rationalize anything. That's up to us to do. If they hear a noise, we'll come out and, you know, don't rationalize it. Oh, I think that was a raccoon in my trash. We'll come out and check. And if it's a raccoon, mm-hmm. it's wonderful. But if it's something else, we'll take care of it. But the Neighborhood Watch is also a training program for police, and people seem to forget that. Our officers are reactive officers on patrol. They're used to answering calls, making arrests, nabbing speeders, whatever it might be. Now we're asking them to be proactive, where we're saying, go in and teach people how to secure your home, how to be a good witness, all those things. So it's a training thing for the police, too. They have to understand that if you've got a good neighborhood watch program, your calls on your line are going to go, you know, you're going to get more and more calls for service. That's a good thing.
But they yes, understand thank that. You. I love that. I love that idea. Now, Is there any place that people can go that might be hearing this, that if they would like some more information about neighborhood watch programs, are there websites, or I don't want to put you on the spot if you want to give out your email address or anything like that, but where can people find out about Neighborhood Watch Program?
Well, they certainly can find out from ISCPP, and I can give you our website if somebody will write it down for me and hand it to me. But they can certainly go onto our site and get information about Neighborhood Watch. We'll be glad
okay.
to help them. If they don't have a computer, and that's one of my pet peeves, the whole world does not have computers, then
I know.
They can certainly contact their local police department. Most departments have a crime prevention unit or a PR officer that would be glad to help them. Let me give you our website. It's very simple. It's iscpp.org. And we've got tons of information on there, not only about Neighborhood Watch, but about who we are and what we do.
I'm going to actually post a link on my own personal website to ISCAP's website, because I always post show notes each week for the different shows that I do.
Uh-huh.
So people who want to go to mydearsafetysolutions.com website, you can also get a direct link to the ISCAP organization. I'm going to be detailing exactly what subjects we talked about on this show. So they want people want that information, they can go right there directly to if they don't happen to remember to go to ISCAP.org. I love it.
And also, keep in mind, you know, we encourage them to join our organization. We've got civilian members who are very active in the community and do all kinds of good things, including Neighborhood Watch. So, you know, we're very versatile. We're not law enforcement total by any means. We've got academia, we've got the everyday citizen, we've got authors, we've got program developers. You name it, they're part of our organization. So we encourage that also.
Yes, and I can't underscore that enough. I'm going to be saying this a lot throughout the program. You know, ISCAP is an amazing resource for anyone who's interested in preventing crime. And I'm just so happy to be. I've gotten so much personally out of being part of it. So that is absolutely true.
Okay.
Well, we're coming up on our next break.
Okay.
So, Jim, thank you so very much.
You're quite
for
welcome.
Speaking with us about Neighborhood Watch programs. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to talk about reality tours. Can't wait, because I'm actually learning about this myself today.
Wonderful.
So stay tuned, everybody. Thanks again, Jim.
Thank you. Now hold on, please.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, How to Respond to Danger in 20 Seconds or Less. Check out www.fightsafe.com for more information. You'll also find information there on Susan's upcoming Crime Prevention 101 personal safety teleseminars. Think fast, talk fast, fight smart, which stress the many opportunities you have to deter or defuse a criminal encounter and how to use your brains instead of your muscles in a fight. Look for the new book information or sign up for Susan Bartlestone's personal safety seminars at www.fightsafe.com today.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions@fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions@fightsafe.com. Now back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
Welcome back, everybody, to Crime Prevention 101. And I'm here broadcasting live from the International Society of Crime Prevention Practitioner Symposium there that they have every other year out in Denver this year. And I'm welcoming my second guest, Norma Norris, who's going to talk about reality tour. Hi, Norma.
Hi, Susan.
Norma, give us just a little bit of a rundown on your background and what is reality tour.
And well, Susan, I spent 21 years in radio, so this is very familiar to me. And I've always been.
I want to talk to you later.
I've always been very active as in this civic area in my community of Butler, Pennsylvania, which is 30 miles north of Steeler Country in Pittsburgh. And our community was undergoing a lot of problems with heroin back 5 years ago in 2003. And I was getting ready for work one day and listening to our talk show in the morning, and our district attorney was talking about how bad heroin use was among our youth. And I had really thought it was something that happened in your mid-20s or 30s that you got connected with that. And so I began to research and ask questions in my community and found out that teenagers were using this drug and that it was way more insidious than we had ever imagined. And I began to try to figure out how could we overcome this problem. Why are people still choosing this when we've had drug education in the schools, you know, till they're seniors in high school? And, you know, national statistics show that 40% of high school seniors don't think heroin's too risky to try. So after a lot of research, I came down to a couple of conclusions. And one was that the kids either don't believe what we're telling them or they don't think it's going to happen to them. And then the other component that I began to look at was my own view as a parent, where I did not know the problem was so pervasive. So how could I protect my children from substance abuse too? And really, every child is at risk in today's society. One in four American families has a member struggling with addiction. So I began to look.
One in four?
One in every four American families has a member struggling with addiction.
Oh, my God. You know, I had no idea that it was that.
Remember, alcohol is still our number one drug of choice. And that the gateway drugs start as early as age 10 now. Using marijuana,
yeah.
Inhalants. Inhalants are a huge problem in high school or in elementary school. And kids are using, you know, magic markers. And, you know, even when you see, like, those Febreze commercials where somebody's got their head in a gym bag sniffing the
Febreze. Can you get high on
just terrible, terrible examples, because inhalants can kill you the first time you use them. And there are 3,000 household products. But not to get too specific about individual drugs, what the reality tour does is we show you the life and death of a teen on heroin in very quick little scenarios that are narrated by the addict, and that the viewers are standing within a few feet of the actual action. And the addict is narrating his scenario for you, from experimentation to imprisonment, from an arrest, emergency room scene, and funeral scene. And these are all happen very, very quickly, and the narration is really what sets up that emotional walk, that emotional journey. So any community can do our program. We have a program model, and you don't have to have professional actors. You just have to have 24 people who care in your community about protecting our kids. If you have that, then you need to go to realitytour.org and check out our program, because you can do it in a fire hall, you can do it in a gymnasium. You don't have to have any special places to do this. It's not held like a theater that you're standing right in the scene, so you don't have to have special arrangements. And this is an emotional teaching method which is easily recalled. And when parent and child are viewing this together, the dynamics are so much different than if you just had a field trip of kids going through the program where they're really more concerned about what their friends are thinking or who's passing a note or, you know, other things, social things like that. When the parent and child go through this program together, the attention is different, and the bond that they have when they leave our program is profound. Parents are our most effective prevention tool, but they are underutilized and undereducated. We have parents who think because they chose the right school district or the right neighborhood, that their child, this doesn't apply to them. They don't need any extra prevention tools because their child's not going to be impacted. Every child will have to make this decision whether they're going to experiment with drugs.
Mm. So who would you say this is aimed for? PTAs? I mean, school districts, of course, I guess.
I look for a catalyst in every community. In Pennsylvania, it has largely been district attorneys, and our attorney general has a community drug grant fund. So actually the funds to start up the program, and it's not expensive. It's our program motto is $3,500 to get all the materials so you can start everything up. And it's way more than just the dramatic scenes. Those are comprise a half hour of a three-hour intense program. You're going to also bring in law enforcement for a half-hour Q&A session. You're going to bring in a recovery spokesperson, either someone who is in actual recovery or the parent of someone who is an addict, to talk about what it does to a person's hopes and dreams, what it does to the fabric of the family life. And you get to ask your questions throughout all of this. And we also do some powerful teaching tools for parenting skills and for youth refusal skills. So we have some very unique exercises that comprise this part of the program so that when parent and child leave our program, they leave on the same page. And what we have given them is the foundation that they need to build on in the years to come to keep that child protected by having the latest information, by being aware that every community has this problem. So if you think it's not in your neighborhood, and everybody who's listening today, when you drive down the street, you need to know it's in your neighborhood too.
But how? What age do you think the child should get the first exposure to this? How young?
We recommend that it's for parents with children aged 10 and up.
Wow.
And I just got an email from a parent last week who brought her 19-year-old to the tour for the second time. She brought her when she was 14, and now her daughter's in college. And she says, I think it spoke even louder to her as a 19-year-old college freshman than it did at age 14. So the program is not, it stays with the proper age group. Whoever's attending it gets the information that they need because it's interactive. So it's not presented totally for a 10-year-old to grasp the concept. It's so multidimensional in how it's taught that any age group can participate and really bring back very concrete protection measures.
I think every college should have this, an orientation week.
That's actually been proposed. One of our sites is Slippery Rock University in Pennsylvania, and Slippery Rock has a name for, I think they used to have their college scores posted all over the country because of the unique name of the university. But we do host a program there, and there has been some talk of its application for orientation. And I should mention, in the community of Butler, Pennsylvania, which has 185,000 residents, we now have three reality tour sites in different geographic areas of the community because six of our seven school districts have partnered with us, and they are actively promoting our evening program, the reality tours held in the evening. They are promoting to parents in all sixth grades. Sixth grade students and parents go to the reality tour sometime during the school year. And the schools even have some incentives for classroom participation because they feel it's that important.
That is excellent. I'm so pleased to learn about this because I didn't have all the figures, but I did know that it's a terrible problem, and I didn't realize 10 and up that because I think that. I don't think a lot of parents realize that they need to start educating a 10-year-old about, you know, drugs and alcohol abuse and stuff like that. That's truly amazing to me. And, okay, realitytour.org, that is the website for information.
I'll be conducting teleconferences for, over the web for people that want to find out more about the startup. So I'll take 10 to 12 sign-ups. So you can contact me by email through the website, realitytour.org. If you just hit the contact button, that's my email. So for any communities that are out there that want more information, I'm open to doing a teleconference to tell you how to start. To get started, you do need our program model, but we provide you with the organizational materials you need to just start the conversation in your community, and that is at no cost. We just email them to you.
You know what? I'm signing up.
Okay, great.
I want to be on that teleconference, and maybe there's some way we can do some more about Reality Tour. I know I've given you a few minutes. I know there's plenty more to talk about, and absolutely, I want to know more about it. I want to make this resource available, maybe in a little more detail, Norma. So, let's you and I talk about that at some point in the future.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled,
and I understand you're getting an award today.
Yes, the International Society of Crime Prevention Practitioners has given us, or will be awarding us, the community-based Crime Prevention Program Award at a luncheon today, and I flew out from Pennsylvania just to be part of that, and I'm just so thrilled with this organization because it takes passionate people like the members of the ISCPP to bring prevention tools to the general public.
Indeed. Well, congratulations on your award. We've got a break coming up. I want to leave plenty of time for our last guest. Norma, thank you so much for being on Crime Prevention 101, and we're going to talk more at a later date. So everybody out there, we're going to go for our last break, and then when we come back, I'm going to be talking about underage drinking and how to enforce the laws about that. So everyone, stay tuned.
Have you ever thought about having your own internet talk show? Well, if you said yes, then click About Us. Then click Be a Host to get more information. Or just call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417.
Say that again.
480-294-6417. VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.fightsafe.com for more information. You'll also find information there on Susan's upcoming Crime Prevention 101 personal safety teleseminars. Think fast, talk fast, fight smart, which stress the many opportunities you have to deter or defuse a criminal encounter and how to use your brains instead of your muscles in a fight. Look for the new book information or sign up for Susan Bartlestone's personal safety seminars at www.fightsafe.com today.
News, opinion,
hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions@fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions@fightsafe.com. Now back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
And welcome back, everybody. We are broadcasting live from the International Society of Crime Prevention Practitioners Symposium. My next guest is Sergeant Brian Donnelly. And he's going to be talking about enforcing underage drinking laws. And the description of his workshop, underage DUI isn't a rite of passage. It is literally killing our young adults. And he's got a three-part program, which has had a huge impact on underage drinking in his community. Welcome, Sergeant Donnelly. Brian,
just
give us a little bit about your background, and let's talk about this underage drinking enforcement program.
Okay. I am a sergeant with the Greenville County Sheriff's Office in Greenville, South Carolina. And about, in 2003, about 5 years ago, we were given a grant from the Drug, Alcohol, and Other Drug Abuse Prevention Services. And the grant was to really basically crack down on underage drinking. In years past, we've had a problem with not just law enforcement, but parents, society in general, feeling that drinking is just a rite of passage. It's just one of those things when kids start growing up, they start drinking. And first of all, in every state, it is illegal for them to drink. And we just had to get serious about this situation. We've seen a lot of kids who have, in our own area, who have been killed in car wrecks for DUI. We have seen kids go to the hospital with alcohol toxicity. We have seen kids do other unsafe behaviors, falling off second floor balconies. And last year we had college-age kids who were killed in a fire after a drinking party. So it is really something that we have gotten into to save teenagers' lives. It really is. We have a program. In fact, we have a community coalition called Enforcing Underage Drinking Laws, EUDL. This movement has grown across the nation, in fact. In August, we went to a conference in Nashville, Tennessee, where 2,000 law enforcement officers and other prevention specialists got together to present the findings. In South Carolina, we started out the original grant in 2003. We had three counties represented that initiated this. It has become so successful that now in all 16 of the state judicial circuits, we have this program implemented. What we do with enforcing underage drinking is, first of all, law enforcement is enforcing the law. We go out and we take undercover officers with a teenager who acts as our agent. Usually age 18, 19, they're under 21 anyway. And they will go to a convenience store with us. We'll drop them off. We'll give them some money. And they will go to the beer cooler, grab a beer, and then they'll go to the counter and plop down the money. And if the merchant complies with the law, they will identify them. They, you know, most...
ask for ID, right?
Yeah, it says, we ID. They have signs all over their stores saying, we ID. But it's amazing how many of them don't. And even we've had them ask the kids, how old are you? And they'll say, I'm 18. Oh, okay. And they'll sell anyway. We started out this program... And we don't try to trick them. We don't try to fake them out. What we do is we're seeing if they're complying with the law.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't, we charge them.
Mm-hmm. What is the charge for that, by the way?
South Carolina's because of the EUDL push, we've had some changes in our law. We used to have to charge them with transfer of alcohol or beer to a person under 21. Now we can literally charge them with selling the beer to someone under 21. The fine for that is $652.
Are you guys out there that are doing that?
That's right.
Beware.
That's in our state, it's $652.
Now, is it a misdemeanor?
It is a misdemeanor, right.
Okay. All right, also, so that's part...
That's part of it.
That's part one. Okay.
We also do party patrols. And in party patrols, what we do is when we get word of a party, you know, I worked the streets for a long time, and we a lot of times had the attitude we don't have time for this kind of foolishness, you know, so we make the kids pour it out, and they get all upset that they don't have their beer anymore, and we figured we did a good job. But then that really didn't stop the kids doing it. So now when we do find a party, we have changed the law recently in South Carolina where it's not just having beer in your possession or alcohol in your possession if you have consumed it. In other words, if we can take a we use an intoxilizer machine that they blow right into. It's not like a breathalyzer. It's just alcohol on your breath is enough to record. And if they record, they've been drinking, and then we charge the teenager. And the teenager will lose their driver's license, which means a lot to most teenagers. But
and isn't it also true that if in some places, I think it's true in New York where I am, that if there's a party, the parents can actually be charged
right.
if liquor
we're,
is served.
We're still working on a social host law, but a lot of times what happens is the parents don't know what's going on. Sometimes the parents will throw the party. We made an arrest, 17 arrests at one party recently. It was a girl's sweet 16 birthday party. She invited 20 friends, and that grew into 70. And the people who kind of crashed the party brought alcohol with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't end up charging the parents there, but we did charge 17 of the teenagers that were drinking at this party.
Great. So that's the part two. And very quickly, because we're coming down to the end, what's the third part?
Well, shoulder taps is one that we generally don't use. It is used some places around the state, and that's where you go to a convenience store and your 17-year-old finds someone that's going inside the store and say, hey, you know, I'm underage. Can you buy me some? And so they give them some money to someone passing by, and they go in and buy them beer and bring it out to them. Those are called shoulder taps, and we generally don't use that. But one interesting thing that we've come across recently is the explosion of Alka-Pops. And in doing classes around the state, we found out that a lot of people, including police officers, don't know what Alka-Pops are. For instance, Zima is a product. It's water. But it's also 5% alcohol, which is as strong as beer. And they have alcohol energy drinks. They have flavored malt beverages. They have a lot of different types of things that appeal to teenagers. They even have alcoholic milk and milkshakes.
Oh, my God. Brian, this is amazing. How can people find out a little bit more about that? Is there information on ISCAP.org website?
ISCPP, we have, in fact, our last issue of our practitioner, we did have an article on that. You can go to other websites such as the Underage Drinking Enforcement Training Center, UDECTC. You can go to that website. You can go to the Pacific Institute of Research and Evaluation, called PIRE. You can go to that website. You can go to Google underage drinking laws, and you'll get a lot of various organizations that are working on this.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
All right. We're closing down this segment. I'm going to do a second show on this, part two. We're going to talk about how to whistle away crime, the safety kids programs, iSafe, tourism-oriented policing. You're not going to want to miss this. If anyone's got any questions to ask me about Crime Prevention 101 or concerns or comments, just go to my website, DearSafetySolutions.com, You can email me, solutions@fightsafe.com. I want everybody, tune in next week. You're not going to want to miss this. You know, and you know what I say? It would be a crime not to listen. So stay tuned and stay safe.
We hope you got some useful information and inspiration this week on Crime Prevention 101. Susan Bartlestone invites you to join us again next Saturday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time and 2 p.m. Eastern Time here on Voice America. Have a great weekend and a safe weekend.